Welcome to Parents Perspective. I'm Sandy Burt. Today we have a mystery guest. He does not divulge his real name, his place of residence, or any identifying characteristics. We refer to him by his profession. He is a physician and an educator. His other chosen profession, terrorist, is one he rejected after completing medical training. He joined the terrorist organization Al-Gamal al-Islamiyya while in medical school and trained with Ayman al-Zawahiri, the violent cleric working with the infamous terrorist Osama bin Laden. Also a scholar of Islamic text, our guest eventually questioned the hatred and violence of jihad. He began to preach in mosques promoting a different message, that peace and tolerance were the ingredients most needed in the world.
I'm Linda Perlis. Dr. Tawfiq Hamid's outlook was intolerable to the extremists, and he and his family were forced to flee Egypt and then Saudi Arabia as well. He has devoted himself to delivering his eye-opening message about what he knows of the nature of Islam and what he has experienced as the mindset of Muslim extremists. His concern is that the West understand the roots of this violence and why it is more dangerous to the world than most Americans can appreciate. An expert on global terrorism, he has spoken and written on the subject intensively in recent years. Also important is that Dr. Hamid himself is a father. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Dr. Hamid.
Thank you so much for having me. It's my honor and pleasure to be with you.
Since you are a doctor and a father, what would you consider the most important message you would like to give to parents?
Actually, the most important message in my point of view is to make your kids or your children have a big dream, huge dream. When you have a big dream, like to be a good physician or a lawyer or accountant or basketball player or whatever, usually you try as a child to avoid things that could be damaging to your health. For example, you will try to avoid addiction or addictive drugs. You will try to adopt a good style of life to achieve your dream. If your dream is good and big, this is, in my view, the most important thing you can teach your child.
But you had a dream, obviously, of becoming a physician, but yet you were vulnerable to other kinds of forces while you were pursuing that dream. Is that right?
Yes, sure. And I cannot deny that at some points I was entrapped within some things that may interfere or intervene with my dream or making it happen. But because I used to think in a way like critical thinking, and the existence of this dream, believe me, helped me a lot. And I have seen it also repeated with my son. He plays basketball. He got recently a scholarship for basketball. And his dream since he was a child was to be a good and a great basketball player. And you can't imagine how when he had this big dream, he avoided smoking. He avoided the addictive drugs. He tried to have a healthy life. So I have seen it in myself, but even more with my child. So I strongly believe if you have a strong dream and big dream, it can even help you to get out of any wrong path if you even went to it.
What would you say is the difference between the educational system that you had and the system that your children then were involved in?
Yeah, my educational system was in Islamic country. An Arab and Islamic country. And I can compare it to the education of my children, which was in a Western country. There is a huge difference. In our part of the world, it was in Egypt, they give more care for rote learning rather than critical thinking. So this was, in my point of view, fundamental difference. In the West here, they care for more critical thinking, and they make the child think, which is vital and important for the development of these children. And also in our educational system, we do not teach much the values of human rights, tolerance and the freedom of expression and accepting one difference or respecting diversity. So this, in my point of view, is vital for our part of the world. We need to teach this to the young children in the Islamic world so that they can develop the values of liberty and the human rights, and it became part of their upbringing, which I'm sure can help all the world by avoiding a clash of civilizations that can happen if this is ignored.
How does that come about if the parents are not behind a change, or are parents behind it and it's just the educational structure that needs to change?
You need here to integrate different powers together. Like, for example, you need to exert some sort of political power. You need to use the media or to see who in the media can also support this. You need sometimes to use the religious power itself, but in a good direction. Religion, in my view, is like energy or power, and it could be used to convince people to go and kill, like what happened to me in my life when I joined the GI with Dr. Ayman Zawahiri. And it could be used, if it is taught in a different manner, to promote peace. So it's power or energy, like nuclear power. You either destroy a city or you can give light to a city with it. So you need an integration of powers here between educational systems, between the media, political systems sometimes has to be involved, and religious systems could be involved in the process. But certainly you need certain quality of people who believe in such values to implement this in our world.
Dr. Hamid, if there already are in those educational systems that you're speaking of, people who are running them, who are teaching in them, who are already so filled themselves with hatred for others unlike themselves, and they are trying to mold the children into what they want, how do we undermine what they're trying to do and bring in what you're suggesting?
You need here to cooperate with the powers, the political powers, for example, in these countries. And probably the system in our countries is different from here. Mm-hmm. If the political power or the government is interested in something, they can exert enough pressure to make it happen. So it's not as here in the West, you have relatively independent systems. We have a relatively pyramidal system that if the governments are interested, and I strongly believe now that many governments would be interested to end the phenomena of violence and hatred, because it's affecting them. In addition to affecting the Western world, it's affecting them. So you may need at some stage to exert some sort of economical pressures on certain governments who do not comply with you. It's difficult to deal with this situation using the word power, but believe me, sometimes you have to be firm and powerful to make love and peace. I always maintained that to make love prevail, you need to defeat hate. Mm-hmm. So it's like if you are a doctor and you have a patient with gangrene in a war or cancer, you need to cut a leg sometimes to save the body. So what I'm saying here is certainly the values of liberty and the human rights are the hope for all mankind. And at some stages you may need really to use political powers, economical power, to use every power you have to exert pressure on certain governmental systems if they didn't cooperate from the start.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion about raising educated and open-minded children with Dr. Tawfiq Hamid.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, The Popular Voters Guide by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Tawfiq Hamid about raising educated and open-minded children. Does this sort of mandate that the West needs to be more culturally aware of other kinds of systems? Because how can you exert pressure if there's really a cultural barrier? There's a face-saving and there are other things that the West doesn't necessarily have.
Certainly, the West need to be more aware of the situation over there because it's affecting you here. It's like, for example, you see the September 11th, for example. It was orchestrated totally outside the States, but it came to you here. And I would like to quote here a word from or a statement from my wife, Dr. Nahed Hamid. She was in the kitchen, actually, one day, and she came to me and said to me, Tawfiq, do you know Islamist terrorism is, in a sense, like cancer, and in another sense, like bird flu? I was surprised with the expression. And she continued, it is like cancer because the more you ignore it, the more it grows and destroys you. And it's like bird flu because if you ignored it somewhere else in the world, it will be transmitted to you. So you cannot think here when it comes to such issues only within your borders. You have certainly to focus within your borders, but your eye should be there because it's a global phenomena. So certainly you need to know what's going up there and try your best to solve the phenomena at a global level. You cannot think just in, and only within small borders here.
As parents, how can we best prepare our children for being part of the international community of the 21st century? You're talking about being globalists and internationalists, and how can we do this with our kids?
It's vital, of course, to make them aware of the what's happening in the world through the Internet. The Internet is a wonderful tool of communication, and it's also vital when you teach them what's happening in the international community, the challenges that can face them, and make them face the reality. So it's vital you teach them love and harmony, and you use like the powers of the Internet. In my belief, the Internet is a wonderful tool to be in touch with what's happening all over the world. Selective use of the Internet.
You've been in the West, and you do have children of your own. What effects have you seen on children in Western communities since September 11th, 2001.
Yeah, I have seen major changes. The kids are still kids, okay? They cannot change all of a sudden to be adults. They are still kids. But I believe that they became aware of the threats and a type of threats that they never probably imagined that someone can come and attack them and kill thousands and maybe millions next time if they didn't care. So there is a new threat that happened to them, and they start to be aware of it. They have seen it real. They have seen it concrete. And it was shocking for many of them. But it's better to know the reality here because it is a reality. And it's better to know it, to be well prepared, and to know that the world is not rosy. There are some things in the world that can really threaten you, and you have to take care and work and use your all abilities to stop such threats from affecting you.
How do we help children be well prepared, as you say?
I think they need to understand that it's vital to be tolerant and to respect diversity, but it's also vital to be strong and powerful against evil. Like, for example, our immune system. I'll give a medical example here. Our immune system understands the concept of diversity and how it should respect diversity. And, you know, the immune system respects brain cells, kidney cells, liver cells, muscle cells. It's as part of the human body. Okay, the moment it starts to be intolerant to any of these cells, problems start to happen and diseases happen. But this immune system also learned that it has to be intolerant to cancer cells. Every day, cancer cells, few cancer cells develop in every human body. Yes. And the immune system has zero tolerance to them. So the moment it recognizes a change in a cell that's becoming cancerous, it immediately destroys the cell or attacks it. So the immune system that's very tolerant to every type of cells, which and it's vital for our human bodies to survive, that this immune system is tolerant. But if the immune system becomes tolerant to cancer cells, then this is the end of the human body. So we need to learn the wisdom here of the immune system and teach this to our kids. They have to respect diversity, to be tolerant to others, but they should have zero tolerance for the systems that do not respect diversity or appreciate tolerance. We need to have a sort of border, to give them a border of wisdom around the values of freedom they have.
Do you see this happening in the educational system in the West?
No. No, honestly not. They teach it from one side, which could be very dangerous because it can work very well if everyone around you is tolerant as well and does not think in any evil or doing any evil to you. But if you are surrounded with some sort of hatred, can cause severe damage to you at any moment, then teaching tolerance in absolute terms without having any borders of wisdom around it can be catastrophic. You can't tolerate cancer cells. The immune system learned this millions of years ago while it has been developing. It learned that tolerance is vital for survival, but tolerance to evil or cancer cells or any bad system can mean or means the end of survival or the end of life.
I'm just wondering how we help children, because they think in absolutes, how we help children balance this tolerance versus intolerance of hatred.
You can use different tactics here. For example, for young kids, very young kids, you can use stories. And within the stories, they can learn that the good has to be appreciated and tolerance could be part of the story, but the evil or bad have to be punished or some action should be against. So you can use even simple stories to give this concept. And also you can give them a real example. If you allow them to grow some vegetables or some, and then some weeds, you see the weeds can destroy it. So you tell them that you have to cut the weeds and deroot them to allow the good vegetables to grow. So you can teach it to them via another pathway or other pathway, mm-hmm. practicalities in life itself.
What about with teenagers? What would you do?
Teenagers, they need logic, probably. You can use the metaphor of cancer, for example, and the historical example, like someone like Hitler, for example. People of this kind, which I believe many Islamic extremists belong to this category. Of course, not every Muslim, but I'm talking about those extremists who are ready to do such violent things against other human beings. They think in the same manner like people like Hitler and these tyrants, and it will be very difficult to think in the concepts of mutual understanding with this kind of people. These people need to be defeated. So, unfortunately, it is a painful reality, but it is a reality. And without doing this, believe me, just imagine someone going to Hitler, trying to convince him that we have to live in peace and harmony together.
I think there was a guy who did that at one point, I believe.
Yeah, but he failed. I'm sure you remember the story when Chamberlain went and returned back with a peace agreement, and Hitler simply didn't respect any agreement and attacked UK. And what happened, Winston Churchill said to him a vital and wonderful word. He said to him, you had a choice between war and dishonor, and you chose dishonor, and you will get war. And this happened. And that is a sad reality, but you can apply it to many other people.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion about raising educated and open-minded children with Dr. Tawfiq Hamid.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Tawfiq Hamid about raising educated and open-minded children. How can children who grow up with the ideology of violence change their focus to an open, honest, and understanding one? How can their parents and teachers facilitate that happening? Now, you did mention earlier, start with the political system.
Yeah, but certainly you need content or material to give to these people to teach, because mm-hmm. many parents may be interested to teach something useful, or many teachers, but if they might not know how exactly to do this. So it's vital to cooperate with the thinkers in these parts of the world who can develop a system or a curriculum. For example, you may need to use the power of religion itself, like to provide a new curriculum. I'm talking about my culture here, a new curriculum for Islamic religion that teaches the verses in a manner that can make them peaceful, which I strongly believe it is possible. I have a website called www.muslimsforhumanrights.org. It's just a simple one. I will develop it more, but at this stage you can see how verses and religious texts could be interpreted in a totally different manner that can be peaceful at the end. For example, most of the violent verses that some of the extremists quote, and many people just follow them blindly, nearly all of these violent verses are using the expression al-kafirin or al-mushrikin, which means qatilu al-kafirin means fight the infidels, but qatilu man kafar, fight all infidels. There is a huge difference. The scriptures themselves mentioned clearly qatilu al-kafirin. This al or the, which means the in English, can specify these violent acts or jihad or whatever against a specific group of people in history who attacked the early Muslims, for example. So they cannot take it and generalize to you and others. But if you taught it to them, and they took it to generalize, it's what's happening now, they apply it to you and their Christian or Jewish neighbor. So just simple care for the two letters, L or the, can make a huge difference in the way of thinking of these children and understanding of the religion. So you need to provide the curriculum of the Islamic religion that can teach Islam in a peaceful manner, and I certainly believe that this curriculum can be developed.
But you grew up with a system that taught you that way, is
no,
that correct?
No, I developed it based on my Arabic language knowledge. I correlate the verses together. Actually, some people helped me initially when I rejected the fundamentalism of the Islamic Jama'a Islamiyah. The main reason, that the factors that helped me really to get out of this was the following: the critical thinking ability that my father used to teach me. So teaching critical thinking in the educational systems rather than rote learning is vital to end the phenomena of violent Islamism.
In school, you were being taught one way, but your father was very analytical and made sure that you learned to evaluate what you were being taught.
Yeah, exactly. And what is needed is to make the educational curriculum itself encouraging critical thinking rather than rote learning. This is what I'm saying. And the other thing, that someone invited me to a new sect of Islam that was relatively peaceful. And I was offered a new understanding of Islam that was relatively peaceful, and within this I started to develop even more peaceful interpretation. So I was brought up on the violent way of understanding things. I will not deny this, okay? Mm-hmm. That is a reality. But I strongly believe that Islam could be taught in a peaceful manner, and through the proper education and through putting a hope or other alternative for these kids. When you are a Muslim child and the only people who teach you the religion who have a theological base are teaching you violence, then it's more likely you'll go to violence to satisfy God or Allah. But if you have an alternative, theologically based, peaceful Islam, then you can argue, you can answer them, you can say to them, no, I will not follow your teaching because it's against my conscience. So, for example, the Quran itself, within the Quran, you can teach it in a manner to promote human rights. There is a verse in the Quran that says, it's in Surah Al-A'raf, that says, خُذَ الْعَفْوَ وَأْمُرْ بِالْعُرْفِ. أُؤْمُرْ بِالْعُرْفِ in Arabic means that order people who follow Islam to follow what is commonly accepted among humans. Urf means something commonly acceptable. So if you take this verse and apply it, take it further to what is now commonly accepted among humans are the values of human rights, so you can have a Quranic justification for these people to follow human rights.
And you're talking across the board. You're not talking about poor people or rich people. You're talking,
of course,
all socioeconomic
all
classes are involved.
Because I was not from a poor family at all, and I was not poorly educated. Dr. Al-Zawahiri was from a wealthy family as well, so he became second in command of Al-Qaeda. Bin Laden was very wealthy. So in fact, I believe the relationship between terrorism and poverty is not as many people imagine. Actually, if you see Egypt, for example, when terrorism happened in Al-Oxur massacre and they killed many tourists, tourism industry went down, the economy went down, poverty increased. And when poverty increased, it became easier to recruit more new members for the jihadi groups and do more terror attacks, bringing the economy more down. So it becomes like a positive feedback mechanism wherein the primary factor is terrorism and the violent ideology. Poverty is a secondary phenomenon. So if you solve it poverty only without caring for the ideology, then what will happen? You are just giving these people more money to attack you with more sophisticated weapons. So you need to understand here the dynamic dynamics of the problem. There is a relationship, but poverty is a secondary phenomenon to terrorism rather than the primary factor. I believe it's not the primary factor at all.
Dr. Hamid, what would be your advice to high school or college students studying now in the West?
The only advice that I would give them, I know they learn the values of human rights, they learn critical thinking, but the only thing that I really want to advise them about is to face the reality, to understand that there are challenges in the world that they need to be very firm against certain systems occasionally. So to be soft is nice, but to be soft with evil is bad and wrong.
And it sounds like with that they need to be aware. They need to be citizens of the world and aware of what's going on because it's hard to have any judgment if you don't know what's happening.
Because if you do not understand what's going around you, you will be attacked again like September the 11th. But God save America and all of you and all of us and all the free world. The next attack could be nuclear. So it's vital in this world where nuclear power is available, where money is available with some extremists, where people are ready to die thinking that they are serving God by dying for him. In this world, in this complex situation, anything can happen any moment. So they should have no tolerance at all to whatever power or system that causes damage to others.
Well, on that very serious note, we want to thank you, Dr. Tawfiq Hamid, for being with us today. You have really illuminated a lot for all of us.
Thank you so much for having me with you. Thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of The Little Book, a collection of stories and articles, parenting tips and resources for all parents and caregivers, especially those who love and care for children and teens with special needs. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. Please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. And mention show number 312. Please tell us what station you're listening to if you can. Since we air all over the world, it's fun to know where you're tuning in. Our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents Perspective, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. At the site, you can even hear a show at any time. Just scroll down to the topic or guest of your choice and click onto the words Listen to Podcast below. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.